Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Supercoach Edge, and it is post round one. Now, we were all so excited come the first game of the round, naturally, but by the end of the round itself, I imagine a lot of us would have been more than happy for the season to be restarted had we been given the chance due to just the sheer amount of carnage that we faced. Like, we know that we face carnage. It's inevitable. But in round one, oh, and I know, Liam, you actually were dealt, once again, your fair share.
The curse seemed to continue with not just one, but two injuries to my side in round one. Luckily, it looks like, we'll touch on this, but Liam Jones might keep his spot. Yep. But obviously have Stuart, who went down with his, what is it, a medial or something. Yeah. But you know what? It's all good. It's all good. This round was just a practice, wasn't it? It's not.
It's not the real thing. It kicks off this week. Yeah, that's a fair point.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, and then they throw in like extra, you know,
couple extra trays.
Like, you know, multi-balls, like in pinball, where, you know, there's going to be multiple balls on the ground at any one time, so you can kick multiple goals at one time. Amazing. But yeah, the Supercoach gods, absolutely unrelenting. And whilst I thought myself would come through unscathed early days, having dodged the Stuart bullet, which I'll get into shortly as to how I did so, it turned out no one could escape. Underlined by, yes, Jones getting injured, and then Laird dishing up just what can be described as a flaming turd as captain. As captain, like, fair enough, it's bad enough having him, but as captain, oh, just so, so deflating. Now, we like to think of Supercoach Edge here as a safe space for you to vent your grievances, much like an AA meeting for fellow Supercoach addicts like ourselves. So feel free to hit us up via...
Yes, you can hit us up on Twitter at @Supercoach_Edge, Damon at @DemoJ88, myself at @Liam_Evans_95. As we said, it's a safe place. We can all come together and console ourselves. Facebook, Insta, and TikTok, just search Supercoach Edge and you'll find us there. Yeah, we'll be pumping out the content, but I can guarantee you that we're all feeling just as low as everybody else. But we'll touch on that soon. Yes, but before we kick off, let's give a massive shout out to those that joined our Patreon for season 2023. So very exciting. We want to welcome to the Supercoach Edge Patreon community Dylan, Scott, Arthur, Wade, Matthew.
Different from Quaid. Peter.
Yeah, sorry, Wade. This is the second take. I had a typo. We called you Quaid.
What do you want, Mr. Quaid?
The same as you. To remember.
So having said that, I think we both decided that Quaid's actually a cooler name. So maybe go for Quaid. I don't mind Wade though.
Yeah, Wade's although good. Wayne, I like Wade.
Wayne and Quaid, it's kind of like a bit of a amalgamation of both. So not bad.
Yeah,
not bad.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Think about.
We do appreciate your support in 2023 and look forward to keeping you taking you on in the Cash League from I think next round starts.
Yes. Yeah, next round it does start. And we'll be running through the matchups in the Discord, of course. So keep a watch on that. And Banter and whatnot will be flying left, right, and center. As will the insults, no doubt. So feel free to throw them our way. But yeah, it's always nice to have the support of our listeners and viewers alike. So very much thank you to all of you. And yes, we will endeavor to get everyone's name correct going forward from here on out. But thank you nonetheless. So it's no secret we have a lot to cover in this episode. So let's kick it off with our usual in-season segment for the first time this year. And it is the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, there was probably more bad and ugly than good. So instead of naming all of our failures, as we'd be here pretty much all day, we'll instead use this segment this week to quickly fill you in on how our teams ended up shaping up, because we did do our final team release or final team reveal. However, with the carnage, even pre-round one, with changes and omissions and whatnot, we had to again change our final team to a final team. You'll see my team up on screen now. And the big change was downgrading Yo to McKenna, which turned into a win. My second choice for Yo was actually initially Bose, who was also injured. And the third, who was Crozier, was left out of the side. So it got me thinking, okay, well, who's my fourth option? And it was another mid-pricer who I thought could make as much bank potentially as Yo. And we'd spoken about him in episodes prior, and you'd spoken about him, Liam, as well at length. And you highlighted how, and it's sort of partially blaming you here, but no, I'm going to blame myself. I am willing to take the blame. This particular player had a really favorable fixture early on, at least the first six games of the season or thereabouts. And he does. But I didn't factor in that this player is none other than Nat Fyfe. And I took a stroll, you could say, down the path that I was thinking the Supercoach gods were directing me on, because all my other options were either injured or omitted. Mm. And so I upgraded McLean to the old burn boy. And do I regret it? Yeah. Hey, let's just say that I'm a glutton for punishment. But let's never speak of this ever again. Even though I reckon this is probably the fifth time that he's burnt me now across the journey. Every time he's been injured. Although, credit to him, credit where credit's due, he didn't actually get injured this time. He just put in the shittest performance I've seen from him in a long, long while. It was amazing. But have to say, like, even though I know you want to take some of the blame, Liam, I'm just going to say this outright. Have we seen a dumber bloke than me? Fair dinkum. It's like being cheated on a girl and then going back numerous times, hoping that she won't cheat on you and burn you again. Well, I've just gone and done that five times over. I'm very much ashamed to say that I had Fyfe in my team, even though I said numerous times that I wouldn't do it. And I liken it to the steamed hams scene in The Simpsons, except your Superintendent Chalmers and I'm Skinner, having invited you around at my place to you know, unveil my team to you, with the burnt roast in the oven, instead being the shitful burnt score that Nat Fyfe has dished up. And I'm fumbling the whole time trying to hide the fact that I chose the disaster that is Fyfe. I reckon the dialogue would go something a little bit like this. So you can join in.
I'll be Superintendent Chalmers.
Yeah, and I'll be Skinner, of course.
Oh, you gods! My roast is ruined!
Why is there smoke coming out of your team?
Oh, that isn't smoke. That's just the likes of Gould and burning it up.
Good lord, what is happening in there?
Aurora Borealis?
Aurora Borealis. At this time of season, at this time in round one, in this part of your team, localized entirely within your forward line.
Yes.
May I see it?
No. And then I imagine, like, me just walking you, ushering you quickly out of my house, and then my wife Ash screaming out the window, "Seymour, your team's on fire!" No, wifey, that's just the Northern Lights. Oh, terrible impersonations. But yeah, just gotta have a bit of fun with it, fun at my expense. So that's lifted my spirits. A Simpsons gag in there, Simpsons reference. But aside from that, I must say there were a couple of wins. And it was the fact that I upgraded Will Phillips to the Dynamo, that is Sheezel the Cheezel, and downgraded Stuart to Ridley in order to fund the switch. So I very much dodged a bullet there and picked up the cash cow of the season in that exchange. So super happy with that. And I think overall I was stoked 5-a-side. I nailed the majority of the correct rookies in McKenna, yes. Ginby, etc., with perhaps, you know, Philippou, Chandler, Pedler really being the only other ones that I'll probably consider at this stage of those that I don't have. And with the likes of Jones getting injured on five dishing up, I've mentioned it again, that shit sandwich in the form of 26, and Laird trolling all of us that captained him with a 50, which we'll speak of shortly. All in all, I scored a very, very paltry 1,890. Eesh. So fair to say changes will be made. And my ranking is probably the worst start. I haven't gone back yet. And I think you have, Liam, but one of the worst starts in a long while. 75,454. I know it's early days and I can easily...
You'll be able to make it up. Yeah.
I'll make it up easily, but it just hurts you to see that number. Mm. Oh, I just feel like a complete rookie.
Yeah. I know.
How about you?
I mean, yeah, I fared similarly. But before we go into how my week unfolded, let's have a look at how my team has changed since the team reveal episode. Remained actually pretty similar, which was probably quite amusing considering how many changes I'd normally make before the season starts and how many changes David and I were joking about I'd made. But I only made three changes, two of which were based off rookies, and one was a player that I did touch on that I was 50-50 on, literally flipping a coin over. And that was Steele to McRae. Will Phillips obviously was the sub, so I moved him on to Campbell Chesser, and Jai Menzie from the Bombers made way for Harry Sheasel, which I'm very, very happy that I made that change. So on the most part, obviously with just 1 week of data, they seem to have worked out in my favor on the most part, which was good. So while McRae left me with less cash in the bank than Steele would have, actually quite funnily, just on a bit of a side note, I was actually going to go for Steele, but I didn't hit save on my team and I had McRae in. So pure luck that I had McRae and not Steele. So McRae netted me an extra 16 points. And trust me, this round, every point mattered for my team. So I'm very thankful for that little stuff up. Will Phillips obviously played as a sub, and I think he scored pretty well. I think he scored in the 60s, which obviously was much better than Chess's. But he was obviously planted on my bench. But obviously with Will Phillips as the sub, the risk is way too high to pick a player like that. So Phillips, is to weigh his way into the side full to, like I said, as a starter and not as the sub. Could be a handy option to look at if you've got the cash later on the season, but probably not right now. The main difference for me was Menzie to Sheasel. And boy, did it pay off. Yeah. It not only meant that I did actually get to keep Philippou, but also got Sheasel's 118. And I got his 118 on field, which was very, very handy for my team. So my team obviously wasn't without its problems. As we spoke about, I had two injuries, Stewart and Jones, and also had the underperformers in Laird and Stupid Sexy Flanders. But I've thankfully, seemingly, nailed all of my rookie selections at this stage. The only one that I'm probably not too happy with is Chesser. But I think he's probably got job security. But I did get the key ones on the most part. Probably the only ones that I'm missing at this stage is potentially, you know, a Pedler or a mainly Chandler's probably the big one. But I'm also happy with most of my, I guess, riskier picks as well. Setters went well. McRae, probably not a risky pick, but just sort of lower ownership, fired. And Goulden, despite the fact that he is in a lot of teams, I'm going to classify him as my riskier pick because I'm very happy with how he played and what he showed us.
Downtown from last year, round 23. That's Goulden. The prediction.
That is your
boy.
My boy. I guess one thing I will say, I was a bit frustrated as I did actually consider taking Doherty's 108 as a VC score, which I would never do. And I don't know why I considered it. I just felt like, I think I got to Saturday night and I was like, no one's doing great. Like, I didn't really feel like any of the obvious choices for a VC, for a C were scoring, you know, that 125, 130, 135 sort of score. And I was like, oh, maybe it's worth taking the risk. So it's playing it safe and taking Doherty's 108. Didn't do it because I thought, oh, Stewart's injured. I've got an 18 on field. Who gives a shit? Might as well try and see what points I can get. Yeah. But funnily enough, I probably should have done it. But it is what it is. So in terms of score, I did finish on 1,937, so not great. I was actually pretty happy considering, yeah, I had two injuries, like a 5 and a 5, and 18 and a 50 as my captain score, like so 100, you know, for the captain score. So not too devastated by that, considering, yeah, I had a bit of a shit show. My ranking's not much greater, 55,499th overall. I did have a look back. I don't actually think I've ever been ranked that poorly at any stage of a season in Supercoach. So definitely not happy with that, but I think we'll build. And I think considering the shit show that went on, I think we'll hopefully have better days ahead. But now let's have a look at our head-to-head, because I am... I'm finally sitting on top for once.
It took you how many weeks last season, but it's you're here. It's a new slate.
And exactly. You know what? And it's like, it's, the Bombers are on top, first on the ladder. I'm on top, first on the ladder.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Love and life. It's parallels. getting altitude sickness up here. obviously, the one win, and we've got a point differential of just 47. So very easy for us to make. For either of us to, well, for you to make that up, but for, you know, that to be squandered by myself. Mm-hmm. So even at this early stage of the season, we should do a live ladder.
Oh, yeah, I'll imagine that.
I did actually see that. I'm pretty sure one of the broadcasters had a live ladder halfway through the round. And I'm like, not every player team would play it. Like, it's just, why? Why have a live ladder in round one?
Yeah, that makes absolutely no sense. It's like, When Carlton and Richmond drew, it's like, okay, well, they both got the exact same percentage. Mm. They played literally one game against each other. Like, could be any more of a draw. It's like, oh, okay, well, we'll finish like 9th and 10th at the end of the round. Like, just knowing that. So it's just, yeah. It doesn't mean anything. It's nice, though. It's nice. It does mean something for Don supporters, though, I imagine.
Mm, it does.
But just keep in mind what happened with Carlton.
It means absolutely nothing. I'm definitely honest.
At least one thing with Carlton is that I think we're in the 8 for every round of the season or something, we lost to Collingwood. We're not in the 8. So that bodes well for us. So that's good enough for me. I'll take that as a win. Yeah. Even though we drew. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's amazing, isn't it? Like, I think there's 47 points difference. And already in ranking, and this is probably feeds into that discussion about ladder. It's like you're 55,000 and I'm 75,000.
Yeah, 20,000 difference. It's massive.
Yeah.
Like a massive difference in terms of ranking, but really 47 points is nothing. Like that's one good rookie score. Like one of your rookies that I don't have scoring well, or five just actually scoring half decent.
That bloke's name. I'm gonna have to ban his name. He's a burnt roast in the oven to me. That's all he is. Is and I prefer steamed hams to him. But yeah, I guess what we're trying to say with discussion about that is don't be worried about your round one performance. Like, we're all pretty down. Everyone's had a shit one, so don't stress. And don't read too much into the ranking, because you can easily make it up. You can see that there's 20k ranking spots difference there. Just with the pure fact that we've got 47 points difference between us. So like, it's much of a muchness. So don't stress about that. And having said that, Liam, I'm going to come back. I'm going to get a win next week. I will. And you know why? Because I'm going to trade out that bloke. He's gone.
And he's going to score 200. He's going to kick 10 against North. And
that would require him getting the ball in his hands. Absolute twerp he is. Anyway, probably a good time, because we have stalled long enough. It's time to face our fears and address the numerous issues and potential trade conundrums already presented to us post round one in The Price is Right.
Show me the money.
Does that make you feel good just to say that?
And for those tuning in for the first time, The Price is Right is the segment where we discuss potential trades and trade targets from week to week, or whether a specific player under question should even be traded at all. And before I get into this, I actually must mention that I forgot about, amongst all the chaos, that stupid sexy one, Flanders, in my team as well. Sputtered it up. Well, he didn't sput it up, but
Wasn't too bad a score, but yeah, should have been better.
But we'll mention him shortly in this segment. So first up, we have the injured duo, and it is Tom Stewart and Liam Jones, both defenders. Obviously, Stewart, he's been ruled out for potentially up to a month, so unfortunately, he is a must trade. Jones had a pinched nerve in his neck, and multiple reports have now said that he could still play this weekend. More conservatively, you'd probably think he could miss one game, but even so, with a score of 5 in his first rolling average, price change will stunt his cash generation. So the question begs, is he even worth hanging on to, given he struggled in the game time that he did play? He didn't look on. I don't know. Like, it's hard to say. Like, it was like light and shade between what we saw in the preseason with those 11 marks compared to up until when he got injured. But from what I saw, he didn't look too good. And as we all know, picking key position defenders is fraught with danger. So probably no surprise that you're going to have those peaks and troughs. Trading options, Liam, I'll let you roll through these.
Let's kick off with some, we'll call them potential primos. And I think it's just because they sort of start in the next price bracket down from your Uber primos. And that is Jordan Ridley, 504.3K, scored 107 on the weekend, and Dacos, who scored, priced at 502.2K. So very much the same. And 129 points on the weekend. And Ridley looked to be back to his 2021 form of old, which was lovely to see. Had 20 disposals, 8 marks, kicked his first goal, and a beautiful 95% disposal efficiency, which we all know and love. And just, it was just, so I guess as a Dons supporter, I want to talk 2 seconds about this, but the kick-ins, he was taking kick-ins. But it was a very different style of kick-in that I think we didn't see last year. It was often they might have played on, but they would have gone sideways or short. This was really taking the kick-in, playing on, running through, running 20 meters up the field, and then kicking it long. So I think there's a positive there. Not as much short stuff. Very little short stuff. So I think that's a positive. Him in terms of his kick-ins. He did obviously take 45% and played on from all of them, as I guess you could see from what I just said. Dacos, on the other hand, surprisingly not tagged like we thought he would be, which I was surprised by as well, considering I thought Geelong had some good options that could do it in O'Connor, quite obviously. He racked up 35 disposals, 7 marks, and an incredible 91% disposal efficiency, topped off by 33% kick-ins as well. And he just demanded the ball as well. There was a number of times where it seems as though the game plan is almost to get it into his hands.
It's like the first in the chain,
very much so. And there was a few times where it was like, you could actually see he was almost demanding the ball from his opponent, from his teammates. So that's positive, I guess, if you're an owner. Both priced obviously around that 500K mark. We'll just jump back into it. And in the case of Stewart, obviously downgrading would give you close to 100K, which is very nice and could be used to address some other issues in your team, such as, the burnt roast.
Oh, you gods! My roast is ruined!
Or sexy Flanders. and in terms of Jones, it would cost you, 280K or so to afford it if you were to upgrade to Ridley or Dacos, and certainly would come at the expense of downgrading elsewhere. So you're obviously going to have to balance that across your field.
Yep. Like it. Both are really good options. And just quickly on Ridley as well, you mentioned about that style of the kickouts. And I think it's like if you kick it over 40 meters, and even though it goes to a contest, it's still counted as an effective kick, as opposed to if you're kicking your, up to 40 meters or whatever, or below 40 meters to a contest, it's counted as ineffective. So that bodes well in terms of kickouts from that stat. So really, really good. And yeah, he was marking well, looked really good. And yeah, Dakes was awesome. He was like the first in the chain of possessions, and then like the third, sometimes the fifth. Like, he just run on. So I love that style of play. But yeah, it came out today that Port will be paying him close attention. So look out for that.
And just, I guess, quickly, sorry, before we go too much further, the difference between Ridley and Dacos to me is that Dacos is going to get tagged. Ridley's much less likely to get that defensive forward role. As in, like, someone playing defensively as a forward on him. But Dacos will get tagged. And so I think that's where the risk is. Dacos probably has a higher ceiling. if he does get free reign. But he'll also have a lower floor because he's probably going to get tagged. And as we saw in the preseason, it is effective.
Exactly right. And apart from those value potential primo selections there, there are the traditional primo / keeper selections that you can sideways trade to, especially in the case of Stewart anyway. So we have Sicily priced at 634.7K, scored 111 on the weekend. Doherty priced at 603.6K, scored 108. And Dawson priced at 603.1, scored 97. So chances are you might already have one or two of these guys, but nonetheless all present as super reliable replacements for Stewart, given they are all predicted to finish among the top six defensive scorers for the season. In terms of Stewart, the safest option is switching across to one of these three. Reliable and safe, really. Virtually cost you no extra swapping to Doc and Dawson. But if you were swapping him to Sicily, it would require an extra 20K, believe it or not. So with that, I suppose it's something to weigh up, which we will go into shortly. But when it comes to Jones, it'd require a whopping 380K and completely tearing your side apart potentially with two downgrades in order to afford this. So you'd need to activate the boost to downgrade, do another downgrade, and then upgrade.
Let's touch on the cash cows and the stepping stones potentially. They're probably a bit more applicable to Liam Jones. I probably wouldn't advise going from Stewart down to a rookie. Do what you like.
It's your team.
I guess, it's your team. I'm not the boss of you. In terms of cash cows, and probably more stepping stones in this case to start off with, it's Stocker is a good option. Had 74 on the weekend. Gota, higher priced rookie-ish player with 57. McKenna, 93. Loved it. Loved what I saw from him. Ginby, 85. Assuming you probably already have him in, but if you don't, definitely a good option to bring in. And Cole, who scored 78. They topped the list of the potential sideways or downgrade options for Liam Jones, but probably not for the Stewart.
Very nice. Well, let's go through the verdict for each of the players and potential options and avenues that you could take. So with Tom Stewart, I think either option hold merit, really. Those first two options, obviously not the cash cows, depending on your team structure. If Stewart was your only primo keeper at D1, I would opt for the safer route with an assured primo / keeper like for like in the form of Doc and Dawson. It's safe. You know what you're going to get. There's no risks there. And you're not ruining the structure of your entire side. And yeah, I think just the fact that Sicily would require, as I mentioned before, that extra 20K, making probably the less attractive of the three. But if, however, you already had one of those three alongside Stewart, so you had Stewart and another one of those guys in your team already, I would be more willing to take a risk and cashing in on the potential value of Ridley / Dacos. I still think Dakes holds the risk of being tagged from time to time. And, you know, as we mentioned before, that Port have already announced that they're going to put some time into him. And that will limit his scoring output across the journey. And I must say, as an owner of Ridley, passing the eye test with flying colours against the Hawks, I can strongly recommend him. So he'd be my choice of those two at this early stage anyway.
Yep, I agree. I don't really have much to add to that. Ridley's probably my choice if you, as you said, you don't have a D2 is, you know, a Ridley Liam or Jones a Dacos. If Liam Jones is your D2. You need to get a Stewart. You need to replace Stewart with anyone that we sort of mentioned before in terms of Doherty or Dawson. I think as well, depending on your what other issues you have, you may want to consider who you go to. But I think it really comes down to assuming he's in your D2 spot or your D1 and you've got a decent D2 in Doherty or Dawson or whoever. I think Ridley or Dacos is probably where I'd be going. I as an owner, I'm probably going down to Ridley. I think he passed the eye test, as you said. But if you've got other issues like a Fife, a Brun as well, you could downgrade Stewart to a Dacos or a Ridley, and then you've got 100K that you could use to help you with Fife or Brun. If there's someone that tickles your fancy there, definitely not looking to downgrade him to a cash cow and definitely looking to trade. He's out for at least 3 to 4 weeks. Definitely worth the trade at this stage. especially to that sort of key pillar in defense for you.
Very nice. Well, let's move on to Liam Jones. So for me, depending on who you already own and ranking the cash cows / stepping stones in order, it'd be Ginby, who a lot of people already have. And if you don't have him, then try and get him, obviously. Then it's McKenna, Stocker, Cole, and Gota for me, factoring in scoring potential and job security across all of those. Keeping in mind, we have only seen one round's worth of form line to really make an assessment. But don't mind the idea of upgrading him also to a Ridley / Dacos, but only if you were downgrading a risky mid-pricer that's disappointed, such as a Flanders, the Burnt Roast, Braun, those sort of players.
Yep, I tend to agree, but I'm going to go with a little bit different approach. I don't know if I'm going to take this approach as an owner of Jones, but just, I guess, as devil's advocate, it does appear like he might play this weekend. So I don't mind taking the risk and keeping him for another week. Obviously, he doesn't drop in cash until week three, around three, after playing round three. So if you kept him in this week, you're getting another chance to see how he goes, and another chance to see which rookies or which sideways options are potentially better option for you. And as the Squadfather himself, Abdul, tweeted, Frio's defenders, and you'll be able to see this, Frio's defenders scored really well against the Saints. And Liam Jones does face the Saints this weekend. And don't forget, he scored really well against North in the preseason match. I think the way that Melbourne sort of approached the forward 50 is probably the issue that he had and why he found it hard to score well before obviously being subbed off. I think with St Kilda, they're probably more likely to bomb it in side 50. And with their weakened forward line, he's probably going to have a bit of a field day with some intercept marks. So as his price won't change, if he is named, I wouldn't be against holding on to him for at least one more week just to get a sense of what's going to happen. And I guess as well, it should be noted that yes, he did score five, and yes, that'll be in his rolling average, but it'll only be in his rolling average for 1 week. So it'll only affect his score and his break even for 1 week. So it shouldn't have a massive impact on his cash gen. Cause yeah, it'll drop out next, it'll drop out the week after. So I am 50-50 on holding him. I don't like trading in a rookie or a mid-pricer, like a stepping stone, like a Stocker or you know, a Gota, before too far before they're on the bubble, just because I think it's risky. You don't know. They could get injured. They could get dropped. They could get suspended. Anything could happen. And then you're sort of, you've wasted a trade to that player. I think it's all going to come down to me whether he plays or not. If he's going to play, I might take the risk and hold him for one more week.
Fair enough. But it's definitely something to weigh up. And I mean, we'll get some more information as the days approach the kickoff of round two, which is, again, a Thursday game kicking off. It's good. Footy almost every they should have footy every day. That'd be good. Not so much for the players. But let's move on to the next conundrum, and it is the concussed Giants in Josh Kelly and Lachie Whitfield. So both Giants unfortunately sustained head knocks and will now enter the AFL's 12-day mandatory concussion protocol, meaning they will miss round two. Their 13th day is the round three game against Carlton on April 1st. So whilst they will technically be allowed to play, it all depends on their individual recovery. Remembering, of course, that English missed two games last year when he was in a similar recovery timeline, so close to game day. So I'm not saying this didn't necessarily happen with these two either, because as we know, concussion is an individualized injury. Everyone differs, but being so close to that recovery timeline, there's no guarantees that they do suit up for round three. But
I think as well, just with the English example, it's probably should be noted that he specifically the time before also missed two games after being concussed. So it might, again, as you kind of said, it's individualized. We don't know how it's going to work.
Just in terms of talking through their potential options, if you want to trade them out, we do have first up Semi Primo / breakout contender. So the options are varied and plentiful, and these include firstly two of their teammates in the form of Tom Green, who we all know is absolutely smashed over the preseason, and followed it on in round one, priced at 534.6K. He scored 134 points from 38 disposals, 6 marks, 4 tackles, 1 goal, and 15 contested possessions. As I said, he's a mini cripper, and he is embracing that for sure. Carried his insane form line from the preseason into the season proper, and if you don't have him, get him in and join the 35% of us that already own him. Goes without saying there. He is on the cusp. Oh, he is pretty much now breaking out already. It's begun. It begins.
I do agree. I like him. Moving on to, I guess, his teammate in Finn Callahan, 244K, scored 101 on the weekend from 25 disposals, 6 marks, and a disposal efficiency of 84%. Like Green, his preseason form line wasn't a ruse. He's the real deal and will make us a bulk cash while providing a solid stepping stone to a primo down the line. And his scorings so far has been good enough, I guess, to also just be handy on field. Like if you had a rookie in his place, you're not like his scoring's still good enough. He's not scoring like a 244K player is what I'm trying to say, I guess. So it's been good. And look at it, like, I guess Ashcroft, who's probably what, 40K cheaper, scored about 55 on the weekend. So I guess when you look at it in that context, he's scoring really well. So trading Cali or Whitfield to him would also give you bulk cash. And that would be handy if you're trading either player to Callahan and then obviously moving them on. Moving on, Cali and Whitfield, you'd be able to use that cash elsewhere, especially if you had some other injuries or other underperformers.
Spot on. And we have another semi-primo here in the form of Luke Davies-Uniacke, who we sounded out over the preseason. I was a massive fan of him. Then I was absolutely seduced by Tom Green, and he overtook him in calculations for my own side. And boy, did he come out and smash it as well in round one. Priced at 557.4K and scored 143 points from 32 disposals, 5 tackles, 1 goal, 1, and 19 contested possessions. So well and truly picked up where he left off last season and showed that, I guess, his poor preseason showing wasn't really a true reflection of his form. So he tricked all of us. definitely a breaker contender on par with Green. So I would highly recommend, I guess, considering him.
Yep, I like that too. I really like that pick as well. Moving on to Jason Horn Francis, 348.8K, mid forward eligible, scored 136 points on the weekend from 25 disposals, 2 marks, 3 tackles, and a goal, and 67% CBAs. And he looks to be an absolutely changed man at Port. Now, I saw parts of this game. I think, Damon, you saw it in a bit more. Bit more fullness than I did, but he absolutely played out of his skin, and you seem to be a big proponent of him, I have to say, having seen that game, and I do like that. And I think he really did show why he was taken at that pick 1-2 seasons back. He did play with the sort of dash, free smarts, and maturity that he hasn't shown to date, and it does make you wonder whether he was given that opportunity at North or what sort of happened there. I think there's always just questions there. But if he's getting to play his natural role and getting to play like this, could be great. But I guess the one query is it a one game enough of a snapshot to trust him, given that he has had past issues? And even looking back to his preseason games, he had bulk CBAs, but only scored, I think, 70-odd off memory. So you'll have to make that decision yourself. You could wait another week on him. But would it give you absolutely a ton of bank as a bonus? But obviously you can't wait if you're downgrading him if you're downgrading a Kelly to him or Whitfield, probably still a downgrade.
Yep. Yeah. No. You're totally spot on there. I have been a big knocker of this bloke, and for fair reason. He's gone about his footy just in a really dumb, immature manner, I think, like just the way he presented himself on field. Maybe that was due to the fact that he just hated being at North. Maybe it was due to the fact that playing under David Noble, that I have heard, don't want to say anything slanderous, but I have heard that maybe some players didn't get along with him, and probably part of the reason why he's no longer coaching at senior level. Maybe it feeds into all those things, but for me, I am not joking. He reminded me, like, have a look at YouTube and look at old vision of Bucks, Nathan Buckley playing at the Pies and even Brisbane in his first year. Reminds me the way he moves, the way he carries himself, the way he plays. He was even doing look away handballs, like, and just hitting up blokes, like plays that like a Pendlebury would do, like with his eyes closed. Like he was killing it. I could elaborate on this more, but yeah, just suffice to say that I was blown away. I don't think this is the same player. Like Jason Horne-Francis at Port compared to North Melbourne, chalk and cheese. So I wouldn't be too worried about selecting him. And he's actually part of the reason why I'm considering him potentially as an in this week. Like going a week early, you could potentially go and wait maybe another week, which would be the smarter thing to do. But I like him. At that price point especially as well. I think back to people like, you know, JP, who obviously won Supercoach last year. He went early on Cripper and paid dividends. And people are saying about Boak returning to the side as well. I think Boak's going to probably play more time up forward. He did years ago. He's at that age now where they should be looking to the next phase of talent like they have with Rosie and Butters already. So I think that's enough to suggest that they're going to be – and they paid up a buddy. They sold the farm virtually to get Horne-Francis. So I think they're going to give him the best opportunity to flourish, and that's probably in the engine room, I think. So I am all on board.
No, I like it.
Onto the last player in terms of, you know, breakout contenders, you should probably call this guy, and it is James Warple, priced at 309.3K, scored 97 points from 29 disposals, 3 marks, 3 tackles, and 14 contested possessions, and had 77% CBAs. And as we always say, release disposal efficiency, you let him down slightly, 69%, and did hold back that scoring ceiling. But he continued on his hot preseason form with a nice showing against your mob in the Dons. Comes with a similar risk to Jason Horne-Francis, especially when it comes to pulling the trigger on him early, but he will afford you money in the bank also. So weigh that up. If it does afford you a bit of extra cash, which you can use and put to good use with another trade, I would definitely think about doing that trade this week. But if you can afford to hold out, do so. But I mean, speaking of Kelly and Whitfield, you're just going to have to wait and see as to what news come out about them if you are willing to wait.
Yep. And I think with James Walpole, seeing him firsthand, like he looked good, butcher, absolute butcher, but he was just collecting the ball at will, I feel, especially in and around the CBAs. When you compare him to a JHF, I guess you're saving 40-odd K. You're probably getting someone who's a little bit more of a sure thing or had a bit more recent scoring form in terms of through the preseason. Warple scored about the 90-odd off memory in the practice match. Scored again, 97. Obviously, I mean, you don't know what Mitchell's going to do having lost the way that they did. I don't think Warple would be on the block. I can't see Warple being on the block. I don't think he was the reason. Way. It'll come down to whether Mitchell decides as well that he wants to really focus on the youth coming through. But I liked what I saw from Warple, and I would consider him. But JHF also has that handy DPP status, so it's a real flip of the coin for me. In terms of other options, we got some primos, and we're not going to go through them, but we'll just list a couple. In terms of primos, you've got the caliber of Bont, Oliver, Parrish, Cogs, Cripper, all looked good on the weekend and all present as viable, safe options, depending on how much money you have to spend. And I just don't think there's much more to say about them. They're safe, they're reliable. They're probably, those that you could pick and just feel comfortable that you're going to get a decent score from. Obviously, the likes of those breakout contenders might save you some cash, but probably come with a little bit more risk.
Yeah, spot on. Just in terms of our overall verdict, so with these two, I'm in two minds here as to whether or not you trade. If this was post round 3 when prices had changed, I would say hold. Yeah. But given prices are yet to change and we have an extra trade this season, I would say consider this a luxury injury/correction trade reserved every year, which you should be doing pre-price changes. And I think get your trade on. Do it while you can. Holding out a week means you're going to have to field a rookie. So that does really put a dent in your scoring potential overall.
Yeah, don't hate it. I really think it comes down to what issues you have on your side. If you've nailed all your rookies and don't need to or won't be making any corrections, you know, because you don't have Fife, you don't have Brun, you don't have, I don't know, Flanders.
Yeah.
You don't have any injuries, you don't have Jones, you don't have Stewart. Well done. You escaped all of the carnage. Then a trade probably makes sense. I think if you've got the more issues you have, the less likely I'd be to tell you to make a trade, because you're going to need to just weigh that up. If you missed out on the likes of Green or even an LDU, I think trading Kelly down would be a good idea. Whitfield, probably a bit harder. I don't know his exact price off the top of my head.
He's about 400 and he's high 400s.
Yeah, so you're probably going to have to find a little bit of cash, but probably a JHF or a Warple would probably be not a bad option there.
I like it. Yeah, if you've got enough. Sorry, I didn't mention which guys to go for. I think there's merit in going for any of those guys, really. Comes down to how much cash you have. Whether or not that cash is better spent on another trade if you have to deal with the likes of Jones as well. But just weigh all that up. But I think, there's merit in doing any of those things.
Yeah.
But let's move on to the underperformers, we'll call them. We'll group them all together. And it is, believe it or not, Laird, Hopper, Fife, I've said his name again, Flanders, and Brun. So on top of injuries, we also had these underperformers who failed to impress. Rory Laird, he does headline this list, believe it or not, with a score of just 50, came off the back of just 18 disposals, two tackles, a disposal efficiency of just 67%. Still had the high CBAs with 22, which was the highest of the mids for the Crows, but only 206 metres gained, and lowest time on ground of 77%, which I must admit, I was watching the game and I had fan footy open as well at the same time, just to see, because I couldn't spot him on field at all. Mm. And he was on the bench so much, which lends me to think that maybe he wasn't right. Maybe he was sick. Maybe he was suffering from something illness-wise, and he was being managed, because it was such an un-Laird-like game. It was just really unusual. I think it was his lowest score since 2014 as well. So it shows that you have to delve way back into the archives to find a score like this that he's punched out. So whilst it is concerning, it is 1 week. And like you mentioned earlier, it's only going to be his rolling average for that 1 week. For the first three rounds of the rolling average.
Yeah.
And then it goes out of his rolling average. So not the end of the world, but just keep watch.
Let's jump into Hopper. And that was, I don't have him. I'm glad I don't have him, because he also underwhelmed with a score of 67. I have to say, I was watching his score in that Richmond-Carlton game, not praying that he didn't score well, but praying that I hadn't stuffed myself up by going for setters over him. But with the score of 67, I wasn't too concerned until setters came up to play, and I was very concerned then, because I thought, I don't want to have egg on my face. But he did have 18 disposals, three tackles, went at just 61% disposal efficiency, did still have the 13 CBAs, but suffered from, again, from low time on ground at 72%. Don't think there's massive cause concern. We'll talk about them. I won't delve too much into it, but yeah, I don't think there's too much cause for concern there. I think someone likened him to Brody from last year, who actually pumped out a relatively similar score in the first round last year and had similar time on ground as well. So I can't remember who it was. So whoever it was, sorry, but good stat there. It was similar. So one to watch. But let's move on to the roast, the burnt roast himself, Nat Fife. And he was another that...
Oh, no, it's ruined.
He scored just 26 points off 9 disposals, just the one behind, 7 marks, and a disposal efficiency of 56%. And then he also had low time on ground at 79%. So, yeah, not looking great. One that you can definitely look to move on, but we'll have our verdict on him a bit later.
Put that burnt roast straight in the bin. That's unsalvageable. Just there was actually at one stage there where he had, I think it was 5 disposals, and it was like at halftime, and 4 of them were turnovers. Come on, mate. You want a Brownlow medal. Yeah, you had a Brownlow medal around your neck with your shirt off.
He's won 2 Brownlow medals.
Oh, sorry. I forgot about the other one. Does he deserve it? Yeah, he knows off the back of that. Let's move on to stupid, sexy Flanders. He did seduce all of us with his stupid, sexy get up. that he had in the preseason as he turned up across the preseason. But he did end up finishing on 64 after, must say, some late junk time points. Didn't look really good. I watched the game, wasn't really sighted. When he was sighted, he was up forward, had limited time. Really weird. He was thrown back into defense at one stage. I don't know if he was camped on the wing, and then I assume that was the case, and then shifted down into defense. But then he was positioned back in the forward line and camped there for a majority of the game. And it was really when Sydney took their foot off the pedal that he actually started, oh, okay, well, might as well just kick a couple of goals and have some points. But didn't look good. Didn't look good. That scoreline flatters him, so not too happy with him there. And finishing off, we have Tanner Bruin, who thankfully I don't have, but he disappointed owners with a score of 58 from 17 disposals, 4 tackles, 47% disposal efficiency, and just 64% time on ground with 16 CBA. So it was well down the list for the Cats. And I think it was when Tom Stewart got subbed off and it was Parfitt that came on. Parfitt's a midfielder, obviously not a defender. So they had to do some restructuring. And there was just no room for Bruin in the midfield, which was the biggest concern for me heading into the season, which prompted me not to select him just because we know what Scott's like and there's no guarantee you are given that specific position from week to week. So what do we do with these guys, Liam?
Let's kick off with Laird. What do you think, Damon? What do you think on Laird?
I think at this stage anyway, don't trade him. It is super tempting to do so.
Seriously?
Do not trade. Unless he puts in another stinker, however, next week.
Yeah.
So it's really 1 week in isolation. Don't panic and don't overthink it. The Emperor, who is one of our longtime fans and does a lot of good stuff for us in terms of stats, we might post up if he gives us a bit of permission, which I think he will. He did a bit of a breakdown in terms of how much cash he would bleed if he averages, I think it was 90 odd.
So Rory Laird is the fifth most traded out player at this stage, 2.7% of teams and trading him out. 3,338 coaches. But I agree with you. Don't trade him out yet. Hold him for at least another week. If he makes 120 or 130 points, you get the good score. And remember, if you picked Laird, you didn't pick him for the price. So don't worry about how much cash he's going to drop. Definitely hold this week. With that being said, you can short him the week after. Like, I don't mind the idea of shorting him the week after. It's going to give you a lot of cash. I think we'll talk about it a bit later in the episode. There's a question about it. But I don't mind that, but definitely not this week.
Yeah, no, exactly right. Just with that as well. So Empire, so he put up, if he does score 90 across the next 2 weeks, he will drop 72K in round 3.
Yeah.
And then another 36K in round 4. If he scores 120 across the next 2 weeks for round 2 and 3, he'll only drop 46K. And then if he scores another 120 in round 4, he will drop 3.9K. So that will stem the bleeding.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if he does come out and score an absolute blinder, I would not be trading him. Don't be silly.
Yeah,
if he scores below 100, I think that indicates there he's going to at least drop about 100K, which in itself is almost worthy of a trade. Like if we put a valuation of 100 to 150K per trade, if that nets you that, there's probably merit enough to trade him. But we'll delve into it, I think, a bit more next week, depending on how he scores.
Yep, I agree. Let's move on to Hopper Damon. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think he's one to sideways to a Warple, Setterfield, or Horn Francis if he puts in another subpar performance. So not really panic stations just yet in my eyes. Wait and see how he performs and then make an assessment from there. At least there's enough options there to choose from if he does sput it up.
Agreed. Concerning with his score, but I don't think it's necessarily time to panic. Hold on to him this week, but a corrective trade to Warple, JHF, Setterfield, or the like, probably on the cards.
Yep. Moving on to Fife. So, yes, obviously stupidly took the risk. didn't think it would take me just 1 week to burn me, but he cooked himself and he cooked me in the oven. Seriously considering a corrective trade on him, given I nailed the majority of my rookies. So, virtually have a spare trade up my sleeve. Would be looking closely at downgrading to a rookie you missed. if you are in my situation, or perhaps someone like a Horn Francis or Zeeble around that mark, which wouldn't cost you too much coin or might even net you just a little bit of cash in exchange.
Yep, agreed. Didn't catch the game, so I can't talk about it too much. I was just too busy celebrating Dons being on top of the ladder. But based on stats...
I would have preferred doing that as a Carlton supporter than watch Fife.
But based on the stats, I'm not against a corrected trade here. Does have a relatively good run to kick off the season with games against North, West Coast, Adelaide, and Gold Coast in the next four. He has a massive average against North. Obviously, he's a midfielder, so just keep that in mind. I'm not going to raise it as a result. So one good big game could skyrocket his price. That's all it's going to take. So you could hold for a week and then consider your options. But I'm not against trading him out at this stage.
I know you just said all of that, even though I tuned out halfway through.
You got to hold him, aren't you?
You said all of that to get under my skin, and kudos to you. That's just a bit of banter. That's good. That's good by you. It's good.
You don't mind keeping him.
Yeah, if I was to keep him, then you would you'd go 2-0 ahead in our head to head, which I won't let you do. So even if he scores over 100,
he
can have a couple of these.
Trade him out, and you're gonna lose by whatever. You're gonna lose the head to head based off whatever he scores, and it's gonna be 100+.
Yep. Hope he does. Hope he does. And then you know what's going to happen? He's going to get injured like he always does. So, yeah. Oh, well, that's fine. I'll just be using a trade that I'll be using later. I'm not jaded at all. All right, moving on to another guy that disappointed me, but not as much in the stupid sexy one. At least he's sexy, whereas Fife's just stupid, just stupid. So Flanders was someone I was willing to take a risk on, given it'd be easy to corrective trade him. And it is something that I am considering. You could afford to wait a week at least to see how he responds against a less tough opponent because the Swans were grand finalists and they performed as if they were. Could give you the bank to corrective trade to a must-have rookie like Sheasel, for example, which I would definitely do if you don't have him. But in this case, it's a 50-50 for me.
Yeah, agreed. I don't know. He's not really taking on a less tough opponent. He's taking on the ladder leaders next week.
Oh, is he? Well, in that case, the old heave-ho out in your ass with Fifey.
But he did actually score quite well. I don't know what he scored against us in the preseason game, but he played quite well against us in the preseason. So it's a tough one. I'm...
the Dons of the Barometer.
Yeah, sorry.
Good one,
I'm clearly joking, everyone. Please do not at me about this. I'm not serious. Flanders is one that I toed and froed on this like last whatever 24 hours. I'm not sure. I'm probably going to keep hold of him. I don't want to necessarily trade him to a player before their cash rise, their price rise, just because, you know, as we said, injury being dropped, mindful of that. So I'm probably going to hold unless I can definitely upgrade him and even then an upgrade is probably... not necessarily a massive upgrade. It's probably just an upgrade to a higher price, mid price, like JHF or the like, or a Zeeble maybe.
Very nice. Well, let's move on, shall we, to Bruin to round us out. And he's another one I'm 50-50 on, probably more so out of everyone here that we've spoken about. Showed the most promise of the lot, apart from Laird. Early on, and was switched out of the engine room once injuries hit and Parfitt was subbed on, throwing out the cat structure, making his role a bit of a scapegoat. His opportunity and assured role is what scared me away from selecting him, as I mentioned earlier, and it's what is happening at present. I would probably wait a week, and then if it continues, I would trade away.
Yep, I agree with everything you just said there. I think it's hard to read the role based off what happened with Stewart and Parfitt being the sub. I'd wait a week, get another sample, and then trade him the week after. Keep it simple. But we should mention next week we'll be doing a more comprehensive look at the best cash cow options ahead of price rises in round three. So given they'll be on the bubble and about to rise in price, then we won't touch on them now. It'll also be easy to give you a bit more of an informed verdict of two rounds of data as opposed to just the one, and with an assured break even, giving us a better indication of the cash generation potential and probably even a bit more idea of job security.
Yep, they're spot on. Well, Liam, for the first time this season, this is a visual gag. So if you're tuning into the podcast, tune into the vodcast. It is, I'm the captain now.
Look at me. I'm the captain now.
All right, Liam. Well, here we are. Toot, toot. We are both captains at the moment. So, yes, if you are tuning into the podcast and you have no idea what just happened, I just whacked on my captain's hat, which is a bit of a prop for season 2023, ooh, and so too has Liam. So
the power of, I don't know, online
visuals.
Visuals, yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. So, first of all, in I'm the Captain Now, for those of you who are tuning in for the first time, we chat about the VC and C options that you've got for the upcoming round of Supercoach. As always, we've scrounged through the data and found the best options for you to consider. So for those new Supercoaches tuning in, it should be mentioned that we generally have a rule of a score of from 120 to 125 plus for those, I guess, VC scores that we'd like to lock in with the captaincy loophole. So keep that in mind when you look at your options this week. And just mentioning further about these hats as well. So we are doing a little bit of a, should we mention it now?
Let's do it at the end.
Okay, do it at the end. Okay, well, you'll find out as to why we're in these
hats. We should look like fools for the whole segment.
Exactly right. Well, I'll let you do the honors, Liam. Kick us off with the first couple of VC options there.
Let's start on Thursday night. You'll be seeing this game firsthand, Damon. Doherty against Geelong, 7:20 at the MCG on Thursday night, and with scores of 93, 122, 102, and 121 in his last four against the Cats, he has an average of 109.5 against the Cats, which, I mean, not a massive one. He's got a couple of decent scores in there, 122 or 121, but I don't mind it. I think a nice early Thursday night, it's good to lock away your VC if you can.
Exactly right. So next up, we have Dunkley against the D's on Friday at 7:50 p.m. at the Gabba. Scores of 117, 67, 106, and a whopping 202 in his last four against the D's. Makes an average of 123. So, he started the season in all right form, I guess, by his standards anyway, 108 on the weekend. And yeah, I like that. He, again, presents as a bit of an early option. He's one that I am factoring in.
Yes. And in the same game, but on the other side of the field, it is Clary Oliver. He has scores of 140, 118, 94, and 177 in his last four against the Lions. And that comes out an average of 133.25. So he is looking good.
I like it. He speaks for himself. He absolutely tears up the line. So have a good look at him. Next up, we have the Rory Squared. Geez, did he play like a bloody block? Just spinning on end over end on the weekend, just running a puff. He faces the Tigs on Saturday at 4:35 p.m. at the Adelaide Oval. And he's had scores of 120, 92, 108, and 121 in his last four against the Tigers for an average of 110.25. So keep him in mind as well.
Yes. And rounding out our VC options, playing in that same game, it is Jordan Dawson. He has scores of 101, 115, 75, and 104 in his last four against the Tigers, coming up at an average of 98.75. Probably not a bad option to take the risk on for a VC as well, especially considering pod. Yeah, a bit of a pod, and I think considering some of the C options that we'll come up with, being a little bit more short things.
Yep, and as for those captaincy options, let's roll through them now. So first up, we have the Bont up against the Saints on Saturday at 7:25 p.m. at Marvel, and he's had scores of 181. 159, a 94, and a 70. So a bit of a downward trend there, but I think it was the 181 his most recent?
Potentially? Yeah, most recent. So 181 and 159, most recent.
So we're expecting around about a score of 200 on the weekend going by that that rate of scoring, upwards trend, I should say. It just speaks for itself. Bont, security, safety. So factor him in.
Definitely. Next up on Sunday at 3:20 at Marvel, we've got Miller, Tuk Miller, the running man, up against Essendon, and he has scores of 110, 103, 65, and 134 in his last four against the Dons with an average of 103. I think he could be in for a good score on the weekend.
Moving on to Cogs, and he faces West Coast at 6:20 p.m. at Optus Stadium. And he's had scores of 140, 53, 52, and 100 in his last four against the Eagles for an average of 86.25. So a bit of a mixed bag there, but he may flourish without the likes of Whitfield and more so Kelly there as well. So it'd be him, Tom Green, and probably Callahan. Hopefully he stays in the wing there where he does his best work, tearing it up against the Eagles.
Yep, agreed. And in that same game, on the same team, it is Tommy Green. Got him as a captaincy option. Bit of a risky one, I guess. Probably not one that many people would take. He's only played the two games against the Eagles for scores of 102 and 123. Comes at an average of 112.5. But what we've seen on the weekend, 135, I think he scored off memory, or something similar.
134,
close very close. I think he is in – he's a good option. He's a good – pod, I guess, option in the sense that I don't think many people will look to captain him.
Yep. Like it. I like the pod options, probably more so with the VC because it provides a bit of a safety net there. Yeah. But even so, I saw there was a couple of people put the outright captaincy on Tom Green in the weekend and obviously paid dividends there. The hype is real. Believe the hype because he is paying dividends. So factor him in absolutely. But Liam, let's get to explain. I'll let you do this. Explain these prop captaincy hats. Are they props? No, they're real.
They're real. We are captains.
We are captains.
As we say every week, we are the captains now.
We've said it enough. We might as well be.
Yes. So we've decided to have a little bit of a head-to-head just to add a little bit of spiciness to the I'm the Captain Now segment each week. So each week, Damon and I will choose a captain option each. So I'll choose one, Damon will choose one, who we think will be the best score for the week. They don't have to be in our sides, but they must obviously be a viable captain option for the community. So we can't choose, I don't know, some random, like Dane Rampy, who's in 1.4% of teams. Yeah. would have been a good one, but got to choose someone halfway decent. So the rules are simple. Higher score from the player wins. And the whoever wins gets to wear the captain's hat the following week for I'm the Captain Now, because they are the captain now. Exactly. And we can't choose the same player in consecutive weeks. So if I chose Laird last week, I can't choose Laird this week as well. And we also both can't choose the same player. So we'll alternate who gets to pick first. So we are a little bit of fairness in there. So now that we've set that up, Damon, who do you have for your first pick? I'll let you go first.
Well, now that you mentioned the rules, I stupidly didn't look ahead to next week because this player that I'm picking obviously won't be able to choose next week. So if they have a favorable draw, but all right, let's just go in bareback, we'll call it. So it adds even, damn it, I should have kept that on my sleeve. So the pressure is on definitely now with the first pick, but I'm going to go with the pink sweaty pig himself, Clary Oliver, even though he's not in my team. Apologies. Sincerely, sweaty pink pig. So can't wait to be wearing this this captain's hat next week, Liam. Lock her in.
Very nice. Based off that, I'm going to go with someone that's in my team, and that is Bontempelli. I just don't think you can look past him. Two most recent scores against the Saints, 181, 159, admittedly against a Brett Ratton structure rather than, I guess, the boss's defensive strategy. But I think potentially some extra stoppages could help the Bont in and around the ground. I know I'll be wearing the cap next week, so I'm okay with that.
I must say I was gifted because Clary averages 119.9 against the Lions, which is up there with, it's sort of middle of the road. And then the week after, he only averages 101.3 against the Swans. Mm. So Bont, however... Should I let you know as to what?
No, I've locked it in. I don't want to know.
He averages 113.6 next week against. Oh, not next week. The week after against the Lions. Okay. So, we'll see how it goes. Who knows? That doesn't. As we say, what is it? Past performance isn't a true indicator of future performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thereabouts, whatever it is. So, looking forward to wearing this cap next week, Liam, and. Yeah, see how we go. But Liam, I think now it's time. Time to, I guess, throw open the mic to the good folk of the Supercoach Edge community. And I hear a few people asking, "What? Can you hear that in the distance?"
I got to know.
Hey, I got to know.
That is by far the creepiest one I think you have ever done in the 3 seasons we've been doing this. I had chills.
It was the people in the distance. Could you not hear?
Oh,
them?
Was it? No, it sounded like some sort of axe murderer. It was like a bit of a mix of sultriness as well thrown into it, which threw me. But it was interesting. Okay. It was interesting. I'll give it that. But in I Gots to Know, we throw it open to you, the good folk of the Supercoach Edge community, and we answer your burning questions. I've noticed as well, we've still got our captain's hats on. Let's wear them collectively for the first time together for the rest of the episode, because it will be the last time we get to wear them as one together. So
yes, good point.
Let's do you want to kick us off with the first question?
Yeah, let's do it. It's from Empa, big fan of the show, big friend of the show. Empa, check him out on Twitter. At Amper underscore X, EMPR underscore X. So with the, he asked, with the extra 6 trades this season, is it worth burning one to effectively pocket a free 150 to 200K by sideways trading Rory Laird to any number of primos? And I don't mind it, but would probably hold off doing this until next week. He looks great. I think we just need to go back and remember. He looked great in the preseason game, scoring, I think it was about 150, 151, something like that. He obviously had a dud game this week. I think, as you said, my first thought based off of his score and the fact that he wasn't tagged was that he probably copped. He was probably sick. He probably had some illness, something like that. That's what's seen him go down. If he can't score well against Richmond, then I'd probably be moving him on. But I'd definitely be giving him this week. There's every chance you get a 120 plus score. And then if you really want, you can short him for the 150K in the bank to a cheaper mid primo the week after. But I'd definitely be holding him this week. And just on that sort of the extra 6 trades this season, I mean, it's one extra on last year with the extra round. We've got a couple extra from when we used to have 30 odd back when before COVID. But I don't mind with 36 trades that we can be slightly more aggressive in our trade strategy. So I think trading a Rory Laird down is quite aggressive. If he comes out and scores a 150, I'm probably not that concerned about it. If he comes out and scores 120, I'm probably also not that concerned about it. Mm-hmm. It's a tough one, and I think it's a question I'd want to revisit next week.
Yep,
but no, definitely totally, be holding him this week.
Yeah, totally agree on all points there. I think we spoke about it as well at length earlier in the episode. So, yeah, wait and see after this week and then assess from there. But, yeah, there is merit in doing so if he does put in another
stinker,
a steaming pile of shit. But let's move on to the next question sent in by Jason Prentler-Wern. Jeez, you've really thrown us with the name there. Apologies, butchered that. So question is, Laird to Oliver, thoughts? So that is virtually a direct trade. So they're going to give you a, 4.1K in the bank. So on a money saving side of things, or banking a bit of cash side of things, there really isn't any benefit compared to if you were trading down to a Bont, for example. They'll give you 64K, or Tom Green, 170K odd. Laird and Oliver should score very similar over the course of the season. Mm-hmm. Only really see the benefit of trading Laird if you are banking money from the swap, as we just touched on in Emperor's question there and your answer, Liam. But again, wait and assess for next week and go from there.
Yeah, agreed. I probably don't hate it, but I just think over the season, there's no reason to think that Laird's not going to be a top 8 mid. I think we're really looking at it in an off game as opposed to what we're going to see week in, week out. So I think trading from Laird to Oliver probably doesn't help. And I think trading from Laird to, one of those lower guys does. Moving on to our next question, and it is Nerds for Life Nerds for Life Supercoach. And he is on Twitter at Nerds for the number Life SC. And he asks, trade or not to trade? Damon, that's the question.
Yeah, I think we've pretty much summarized it throughout this entire episode, really. It comes down to what issues you have. I think you'd be very, very fortunate if you don't have any issues to deal with, whether it be, first and foremost, injuries. I think I think most people should at least have one player, like, you know, a Stewart or a Jones. If you've got both, you obviously have to trade. I think the question probably comes down to more so using a boost or not, which we may touch on when we have a chat to the good folk at Supercoach Masters maybe and elaborate on that side of things. But I think, I think years ago I would say no, hold your trades and trade in round two. But I think it's best used the first 2 weeks anyway before price changes to really set up your side, correct it where you can in terms of missed rookies, the best cash cows, and then primos who, you know, you may all, not so much primos, but probably more so mid prices. I think primos you should be selecting from the get-go as if you're going to keep them. But Laird again is probably an asterisk because if he has another downer, he's going to drop so much in price. So that's probably an exception to the rule in this case. But I think depending on the number of players that you're eyeing off, keeping in mind if you're going to use your boost in both weeks, you've only got 6 trades to use. And if you're not, you've got 4 trades to use across both the first 2 weeks. So look forward as to how many players you want to get in, corrective trades and whatnot, and that'll probably give you a fair idea as to how much trades you will need to use.
Yeah, I agree entirely. The only thing that I will say is limit the number of rookies you're bringing in this week. So if you missed out on a Philippou, a Sheasel, I don't know who else, a Ginby, try and limit the number that you're bringing in this week, because God forbid something happens to one of them. They get injured, they get suspended, they get dropped. I don't think any of them are going to get dropped, but, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. You don't want to be bringing them in before their first price rise, because you're going to be wasting 2 trades, basically getting them in and then having to waste the cash gen with them sitting on the bench, not making you any cash. Mm. So yeah, that's probably the only thing that I would say to limit in terms of trades, but I'm not against it in any case. But let's move on to the next question. It is from Freeze on Twitter at FreeFFC. And he asks, trading to Cogs a week early to get his points with Kelly out. Damon, I'm going to throw that one to you.
So I guess we've touched on the options with Kelly early in the episode. So should have answered your question with that. But in essence, Cogs should benefit from Kelly out, and against West Coast should score, you know, half decently. So he's not really a bad option. I think West Coast gave up the 4th most points from memory, having a look at that in terms of stats breakdown for points given up to opposing midfielders. So you'd think he should score well. That's something to keep in mind. But yeah, he's an option. He's an option nonetheless, I think. Yeah, it's something to factor in.
Agreed. I think as long as if Kelly's your only issue, then definitely don't mind that trade down to Cogs. Mm-hmm. I don't mind that at all. Moving on to the next question. It is from Alex Caddo on Twitter at MacLoveVP. Love with a 0. And he asks, I've traded Stewart to Dawson. Am I moron? Definitely not a moron at all. I think it's actually a decent trade. But as we've spoken about with what to do with Stewart and reference Dawson, we probably won't touch on this too much. But I think David and I would both probably give this a tick of approval.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's it's safe, as we know. It's going to give you the same points or similar number of points from week to week as Stewart would. So lock and load. And I like the fact that you read out that question verbatim, even with the spelling mistake as well. Am I moron? Maybe. Very good. I like that by you, Liam. That's just keeping things true. See, we're not filtering here. It's unfiltered. That's all it is.
Exactly. But that's it. That's it for yep. I'm the captain now. That's it for I got to know this week.
Oh no, geez, it's been an action-packed episode. It's been a long episode as well. First up, so hopefully you've appreciated the extra input that we've thrown in terms of those options that you could be looking at if you are an unfortunate owner of the likes of Jones, Stewart, the Burnt Roast, all those sort of players. But yeah. But before we wrap up, Liam, let's run through our Supercoach Edge Cup group results, which is, of course, the public group for round one.
Yes, and in our Supercoach Edge Cup group, we've got the highest overall for this week was Chompers. Nathan with his team Chompers. He sits number one in the group with a score of 2,272, massive score, especially for this round,
wow.
And an overall ranking of 88th for the competition. Very, very nice.
Well, that brings us to the very end of the show, but before we go, Liam, where can our listeners find us across our socials?
Yes, if you want to get the full visual effect of this podcast/vodcast, search Supercoach Edge on YouTube, the Captain's Hat and all, and don't forget to like and subscribe. On Twitter, you'll find us at @Supercoach_Edge, Damon at DamoJ88, myself at @LiamEvans_95, Facebook, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. If you search Supercoach Edge, yeah, that's where you'll find us.
Very nice. Well, let's hope the Supercoach guides are a little kinder to us all this coming weekend, as the introduction to season 2023 was fair to say a baptism of fire. So fair to say all the best for the weekend ahead, and we'll catch you same time and same place. See you then.
See you guys.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.